Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Jessica with Syosset Libraries Turn the Page podcast. And our guest today is, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, hello, I'm Christina Henry, and I am the author of the forthcoming book Near the Bone, as well as Alice, Red Queen, Looking Glass, Lost Boy, the Blackwing series, and Ghost Tree, a bunch of other stuff. Yeah.
I was very excited to see that you had another book coming out because I read Ghost Tree last summer and thought it was phenomenal. Actually, Ghost Tree came out. Did it come out in the fall?
It came out in the fall.
Yeah. See, this is the beauty of being a librarian is mm-hmm. you get ARCs. And this kind of comes into like some other interview I did a few weeks ago where I just like had this weird realization that in a way librarians have become influencers because we're the ones who are like, here's a book, you can take this book, but instead of like, you know, selling products the way that influencers are thought to be, we're pushing books on people.
I approve of pushing books on people.
Right? And you know, like we purchase the books and we have them for people to take out. And, you know, even like after the books are not new, we're always telling people to, you know, what we love to read. So I like to say that we're like the light side of influencers. But Ghost Tree was one of those books that I said, okay, this looks really interesting. And I read it in two sittings, which is impressive because I have two kids at home who are quite young and demand attention. And then when I saw Near the Bone coming out, I immediately jumped at it. And not only did I want to read it, but I wanted to talk to you about your books.
I loved writing. The Ghost Tree was one of my favorite books I think I've ever written. Just incredibly easy for me to write. I don't usually have trouble writing, but that was a book where I literally got up every day. It's like, I can't wait to write this book. I can't wait to see what's going to happen. It was just one of those books where, you know, I really was, because I don't outline and I just kind of write chronologically and see what happens. And that was a book where I just really couldn't wait to see what happened next.
It was so good. And I know you've written, within almost, like other canons before, like, Alice and Peter Pan. That one particularly, it was very cool because it took place in like the 80s, right? Ghost Tree. So one of the cool things I guess you can do with a setting like that is that there is no social media or cell phones, which makes much more difficult to contact somebody if something is going down and makes things a little bit more urgent.
Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, partially because I grew up in the 80s. Yeah. And that was my generation. And, you know, when I was growing up reading books like coming of age stories, there were all these books like by Stephen King and Ray Bradbury and, you know, like Robert McKimmon's Boy's Life and stuff like that, where people were these men were writing about the time of their childhoods, you know, like the 50s and the 60s in this very kind of nostalgic way. And they would incorporate horror elements into their coming of age stories. And that was really what I wanted to do, you know, for myself, like, but for women.
Right. Yes. And I think there's a lot of desire for that. I guess I should say like I'm like 80s, 90s, and there at the very, very end of my teenagehood, there were beepers, but that's not exactly the same thing as the connectivity that we have now. You know, like even if you had a beeper and somebody paged you, you had to go and find a payphone and you needed change in your pocket in order to make that phone call. So maybe now that I'm thinking about it, maybe there's a horror story in that. So let's get to Near the Bone.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it. It had so many elements in it. It had the horror, almost supernatural side to it. And it had a human horror side to it as well. Why don't you tell the listeners, I guess, in your words, what Near the Bone is about?
Yes, I don't want to get too spoilery because there are some big revelations in this story. But a woman named Maddie lives on a mountain with her husband, William. He's quite a bit older than her, and they're completely isolated. And William basically controls every aspect of her life. And one day when Maddie's out checking the traps to see if there's rabbits in them, she sees a dead fox. And this is an indication that there is something else in the woods with them that's never been there before.
Yeah, it was very creepy. There was one of the reasons I actually brought up the ghost tree prior to it is there was a lot of there was like a presentation of the horror, the remains of people who were killed, and there was that almost had like an occult aesthetic to it. And this book has a little bit of that as well when it comes to the animals that Maddie finds. And the balance was great because then you also have the story of Maddie, who all she has in her life is William. And her flame has been like extinguished. You know, you don't really know much about the two of them, and you're not really sure whether this is the 1600s at first or whether it's like post-apocalyptic or like a Handmaid's Tale situation. It sort of unfolds, but you do have this ominous feeling as she makes these discoveries and is wondering to herself what kind of animal would kill but also make these arrangements. Where did this whole story come from? I think you've already established that you don't outline, which blows my mind because everything fits together like a puzzle piece.
Which is just sort of a weird miracle for every single book because, I don't outline. And I mean, one of the reasons why I do that is because I like to find the story the way a reader would. I want to feel as I'm writing it that things that would be a surprise to the reader are also a surprise to me. And it makes it sound a little bit magical, but it's not. It's really just that I'm kind of a lazy writer and I just let the back of my brain do a lot of the work instead of, you know, sort of forcing it into the front of my brain. And the upshot of that is that writing tends to be relatively easy for me. I don't have, like, I've never had writer's block. I don't have those days where I'm just sitting there kind of forcing it. I just kind of, you know, let things flow and see how it goes. And, when I'm done writing for the day, I'm done writing. And, you know, that's it. I don't try to, like, make myself write a certain amount every day or whatever. Some days I write one page. Some days I write 8 pages. You know, just kind of see what it is on the day.
So how did you start writing horror? Was there horror? I mean, you mentioned Stephen King and all of the, you know, the men back in the day who wrote about their childhood and with a little bit of horror in it. How did you start writing horror? And were there other like hidden gems within your childhood that kind of pushed you in the way of saying, you know what, I could do this?
I mean, I started off, my first 7 books are urban fantasy, and there's definitely darker elements in those books. And then I would say, like, it really transitioned when I wrote Alice. Alice just turned out to be, I think that the editor was expecting a like another fantasy novel from me, and it just turned out to be a horror novel. It just kind of happened. And most of my subsequent books, except for The Mermaid, although The Mermaid has, I would argue, horror elements in it, are, you know, what would probably be clearly defined as horror. I, you know, like a lot of things, it just happened. I've always read horror. It's always been an element of what I read and like an element of, you know, films that I watch. But I also, like, I read pretty widely across the spectrum of genres. So it's just, you know, again, like, it makes it sound like my process is like very like magical, but it's just like, well, that's just the way the stories turned out. You know, they just kind of go in that direction without me trying to force them to be one thing or another.
It's always very interesting to speak with a writer and see how different everybody's process is. And I mean, you know, just like with a painting, not everybody approaches things with the same technique, but it turns out the way it's going to turn out. I guess, like, for myself, I found myself to be a horror reader and consumer of like horror media much later in life, because when I was younger, I was afraid of pretty much everything. I think I secretly liked it, but I didn't know as a child how to process the feeling it gave me. And as an adult, I could look at it a little bit more objectively.
I think that, you know, I mean, I was a very credulous child. So I definitely believed whatever I read or saw or whatever. You know, and horror movies really scared me when I was young. And sometimes they do still really scare me, even though I, you know, as an adult, you know, it's not real and like it's not really happening, whatever. But I do like that feeling. You know, I like that feeling of being on the roller coaster. I like the suspense that comes with that, of not knowing what's going to happen next.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I think. It's the only other from what, you know, like back in the day, like the only other thing that kind of has like a mirror effect is slapstick comedy, because they both give you almost like a physical reaction. But it's weird to think of the two things as almost like, you know, twins, but they do both elicit something in you that either makes you hide your eyes or like gets your heart pumping and gets you anticipating what's going to happen next. So you have another book coming out this year as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Horseman. It'll be out in the fall.
And that's like a Sleepy Hollow type story.
Yep, a Sleepy Hollow type story.
Did you grow up in the Northeast? Are you from that area?
Yeah, I'm actually from Hudson Valley.
Oh, wow. Excellent. Yeah. Oh, that's so cool. Yeah, there's I've been on a tour of the Sleepy Hollow Cemetery, and it's quite beautiful up there.
Yeah, I grew up you know, near the Catskills, and my dad always told me Washington Irving's stories when I was a kid. I mean, especially Rip Van Winkle, I remember when I was a kid. But yeah, like the whole idea of Sleepy Hollow, Headless Horseman, has always sort of been part of my life.
It seems like it would be difficult not to be. And I know that that area changed its name, I think, from Tarrytown to Sleepy Hollow officially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did. I mean, makes sense.
Yeah, for tourism alone. I mean, you know, if you're like, oh, I'm going to Tarrytown, which inspired Sleepy Hollow, you're going to get a lot more interest if it's like, this is Sleepy Hollow.
Sure. I mean, it's kind of like Salem, Massachusetts, right? Where like most of the industry of the town is sort of revolves around the witch trials. And it's such a it's a great place to visit, but it's also like just this really weird dichotomy where a lot of modern day Wiccans have sort of claimed that area, you know, and like sort of taken back the agency of women who practice magic. But at the same time, like the whole industry of the town revolves around these deaths. It's really, it's like, it's such
it's so strange because, and the women were not at all, like they were prosecuted for just being like different, or they ticked somebody off, or Tituba, I guess, would probably be arguably might have been like practiced some sort of folk magic, but it would, you know, she was a slave, and that whole situation, even saying that, is somewhat is problematic as well. So yeah, it is very interesting how their industry is centered around that, but not really.
Right. Yeah. It's just a really interesting place to visit. And it's sort of the same thing with Sleepy Hollow, because, you know, it's a fictional story that was written by, you know, Washington Irving. And it's almost become, you know, a folk story unto itself, like, you know, not attached to its original source.
Yeah, everything, in a way, everything spins off into fan fiction at some point. I mean, even things, I think the more with the growth of technology, the more, you know, the closer, it doesn't even take as long anymore. I mean, you have reboots, which are essentially fan fiction, which there's nothing wrong with that. I love fan fiction. But I think it's really interesting to see just how quickly things become folk tales within themselves as time stretches.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's how like things sort of enter like the cultural lexicon. And like a perfect example of that is, you know, I wrote this book, Alice, which is extremely loosely based on Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. And so many people describe it as a twisted fairy tale. And I always say, like, well, it's not actually a fairy tale. You know, it's a book that was written by an author, but it's entered our lexicon in such a way that it starts to feel like a folk story. You know, we have this whole language that's been drawn from the original book, things like Falling Down the Rabbit Hole, right? That has sort of entered our cultural consciousness. And so people start to think of it in a way that's completely divorced from its original source. They think of it as a fairy tale.
Yeah, that's true. I wonder how much of that comes from the Disney adaptation, because I think most people consider anything that Disney adapted, especially in that age, as a fairy tale, but it's not, and it has its own lore behind it as well. And most of what was adapted into that is not, you don't see a lot of it in the Disney version. So that is interesting. Actually, you also did an adaptation of Peter Pan. Would you say that that's a similar situation? Because Peter Pan, you can talk about it being based on certain parts of folklore, but that was written by an author as well. It wasn't like Cinderella, which has versions across every continent and culture, but, you know, like the classic version we think of was adapted as a fairy tale. That one was written by James Barry.
Right. And that's definitely the same situation where, you know, again, like so many elements of that story have sort of entered like our general sort of shared knowledge, and people start to think of it as a fairy tale. And, you know, I don't want to be like pedantic, but the only story I've ever written that's actually based on a fairy tale is The Girl in Red, which is based on Red Riding Hood. And, you know, I know it's just a way that people think of these stories. They don't think of them as coming from a book, like, or an original source. They think of them, you know, in the way that we all kind of know the basic story of Alice in Wonderland, right? We kind of all kind of know the basic story of Peter Pan and Wendy. They're just things that somehow, maybe when we were a kid, we watched a movie, maybe our parents told us a story, maybe we went to Disney World when we were kids and rode a ride that introduced those characters to us. So yeah, just sort of becomes part of like this big, you know, sort of subconscious soup that we're all, you know, drinking from.
When you are drawing a story from another source versus when you're writing something that does not have that base, do you find your process a little bit different?
Not at all. Yeah. And part of that is because once I start writing a book, that story is mine. It belongs to me. And I don't feel any sense of loyalty to like the original source. I just start writing something that's going to be mine. And when I was writing Lost Boy, you know, this is a perfect example of how I write. So a lot of times when I write, things sort of come from a question or an image that I have in my head. And when my son was 5 years old, he was completely obsessed with Peter Pan. And I mean, obsessed. You know, we read the original novel together and we watched the movie 100 times. He dressed up as Peter Pan for Halloween. You know, we went to Disney World. The first ride we had to go on was Peter Pan's Flight. Like, he just loved Peter Pan. And I was watching the Disney adaptation with him for like the 1,000th time. Because if you have young children, you know that they need to see a thing like every day, sometimes twice a day.
Sometimes three times a day. yeah.
If they're into it. And we were watching the film and I started to think, like, why is Captain Hook so mad at Peter Pan? You know, isn't he an adult? Like, isn't he a pirate? Shouldn't he be doing like pirate things instead of like hanging around, like harrying this kid? And so I wanted to know the answer to that question. So I started writing Lost Boy so I could find the answer.
Are you a fan of other adaptations of Peter Pan?
I actually don't know that I've read any others. I actually don't. It's sort of funny. I don't actually read very many adaptations of other works. I mean, I've read, you know, some Gregory Maguire novels.
Yes, but he does a lot of adaptations. That's another one. The Wizard of Oz is not a fairy tale.
Exactly.
It's this whole series of novels from Baum, which again, but people think of it as a fairy tale. That's a good point.
Yeah, they just sort of, because we've just sort of incorporated so many elements, particularly because of the enduring power of the film adaptation of the first book, which, you know, again, follow the yellow brick road, you know, there's no place like home. Think of all these like phrases that sort of entered our language and that we use, and we don't think about the source where they've come from, and we don't think about the story that inspired them. They've just become, again, like part of like that cultural consciousness.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, I think there was a cute children's prequel to Peter Pan that came out, man, it was like over 10 years ago, called Peter and the Star Catchers by Dave Barry, which I always thought was funny because we'd file it next to Barry. But, you know, in my mind, because I was a kid when this came out, like, I always think of Hook as an adaptation of Peter Pan.
It is. Yep. I do remember seeing that when I was younger, but I wasn't super young when that came out. I don't remember the year that film came out, but it was in the 90s, right? It was the
very early 90s. Yes.
Yeah. And I was born in 1974. So, you know, I was already an older teen probably when that came out. So I don't think it had the same kind of impact for me that it would have had for people who maybe were a little bit younger.
Yeah, I was a young teen at that point, but I had a much younger brother who, to him, you know, I think he saw that before he saw the Disney Peter Pan. So one more thing, I guess, because it again pertains to what we were talking about. There's a lot of folklore and urban legends, horror urban legends that come from things in the past, like household tales that we can't remember where they came from. Do you ever have the desire to write something from that point of view?
I mean, I love urban legends and I love trying to source urban legends. I just think they're like the mechanics of the urban legend are completely fascinating. The way that they're spread primarily because of what amounts to like a tenuous personal connection. The person telling you the story is always like, my cousin's boyfriend had this happen to them, right? Like, it's always somebody who's like sort of personal, but really distant, you know, like not so close that you can actually verify the story. And then they'll tell you, you know, some crazy thing. And this is such a great thing about urban legends, and that I think to a certain extent, I tried to incorporate a sense of that in the Ghost Tree, consciously, but there is kind of an urban legendness around what happens to these girls in this story. But I don't think of writing in that way. Like someday I might write a book about the guy with the hook for a hand, you know, and like that urban legend about the couple who's stranded on the side of the road. Actually, one thing I love to do is to find out if people have heard a slightly different version of stories like that, because they are kind of regional.
It's so much fun.
Like, as I grew up in New York State, and my husband grew up in the Chicago area, so we both had like slightly different versions of the same story that we had heard when we were kids. I don't think of, you know, like I said, I don't think of writing that way. Like the way I write, it's more like I said, it comes from a question that I have or an image. I wrote Girl in Red because I just saw this woman in a red hood holding an axe, and I was like, well, who's she, you know? So I was like, let me write a book so I can find out who she is, you know. That's how my process is, and that's how all of my books start, from this really tenuous kind of thing where I'm just kind of like working my way in and shaping. So I don't really think, oh, well, someday I'd like to do a story about X, Y, or Z. That's not really like the way my process works.
Have you found it hard to write during the pandemic?
No, I mean, I've been writing now for unbelievably 11 years, which really seems miraculous in this industry to have been going for, you know, more than a decade. My first book came out in November 2010. It's just, to me, that's crazy. Because when your first book comes out, you're just like, I'm so happy to have one book. And you're never really thinking, like, what's going to happen down the line. But, I've been doing this for a long time. I had already been homeschooling my child for many years. So I didn't have really a lot of changes in sort of the way that I structured my day or anything like that. I mean, obviously changes around other things outside, but not kind of with my writing or schooling or having the time to get things done. Obviously, like, my son is now in high school. I've been homeschooling him all along, and now he can be much more self-directed. So in a way, I actually have more time to write than I did before when he was younger.
So once again, when does Near the Bone come out?
April 13th. So really, really soon. I hope people check it out. I think if you're a horror fan, you know, I think you'll enjoy it. And if you're not, I think you'll still enjoy it. You know, it's suspenseful.
Even if, you know what, I would say even if you are a fan of psychological thrillers, there are elements that you will enjoy. I loved it.
I'm so glad. I love to hear that, because whenever I try something new, there's always a little bit of trepidation. Like, oh, well, people get on board with this. But I think especially people who liked Alice, I think this is very similar to Alice.
Well, once again, thank you so much. This was Jessica with Syosset Public Library. Our guest today was
Christina Henry.
And we are going to close this chapter of Turn the Page.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.